Usually, right, when we talk about these colossal towering structures, like say a medieval fortress or a walled city, there is this immediate expectation of, well, impenetrable exclusivity.
Oh, absolutely. The design is intentional.
Right, exactly. Like you stand on the outside and you look up at these massive, smooth stone walls and the heavy iron gates, and the dynamic is just incredibly obvious to you. You know you are on the outside, and while they are on the inside.
And historically, I mean, the financial landscape operated on that exact same binary.
Oh, for sure.
For over a century, Wall Street was, the ultimate walled garden. The language they used was deliberately opaque. The barriers to entry were both physical and mathematical. And the institutions were, quite frankly, entirely designed to keep the vast majority of the public just looking at the exterior walls.
Yeah, you either had the capital to get past those gatekeepers, or, I mean, you were just standing in the mud.
Standing in the mud, exactly.
Which brings us to the core mission of today's deep dive. Welcome to the show, by the way, to you, the listener. We are so glad you're here because today we are looking at a single, incredibly specific foundational text.
And it is brief, very brief.
Right. It's not some 600-page macroeconomic textbook or like a dense white paper on algorithmic trading. We are not doing that today. Our entire exploration today hinges on a single sentence, eight words.
Let's hear it.
How beginners can start investing with little money.
It's almost deceptively simple, isn't it?
It really is. I mean, looking at this text is it's like looking at the cover of a mystery novel.
I like that analogy. How so?
Well, it tells us exactly who our protagonist is, right? The beginner. And it sets up their main constraint, like the central conflict of the story, which is little money. So our job today is to dive into the underlying mechanics of how those two concepts actually interact.
Because for decades, I mean, putting the words beginner and investing in the exact same sentence without a massive capital requirement attached, it was essentially an oxymoron.
Total oxymoron. It just didn't happen.
No, it didn't. And the sheer social and psychological weight of that short phrase, it's just fascinating when you view it through the lens of market history. It takes aim at, really, the two largest barriers to entry in finance simultaneously.
Right, the lack of knowledge and the lack of capital.
Exactly. The lack of knowledge is represented by beginners, and the lack of capital is represented by little money.
So let's unpack this and focus on the very first part of this promise. The text explicitly offers a method. It says how.
Right, the how, not the why.
Exactly. It doesn't say why you should or give you like the history of the market. It promises a functional step-by-step pathway tailored entirely for beginners to start investing. So, I mean, what does framing it that way imply about the modern nature of investing itself?
Well, I think it dismantles a myth that the financial sector spent decades, maybe centuries, actively cultivating. By pairing how with beginners, the text makes a profound declaration that investing is an accessible mechanical process. It is not an innate talent, it's not a genetic trait or some exclusive club requiring a specialized degree in finance.
Which is how it always felt, right? Like if you didn't have the degree, you couldn't play.
Oh, heavily. Because in the 1980s or 90s, the how was deliberately hidden behind a human broker who acted as a translator.
You literally had to pick up a phone.
You had to call someone on a physical phone, pay a massive commission, and trust their expertise blindly. And the language of finance, I mean, terms like EBITDA, yield curves, contango.
Right, contango, what even is that?
Right. It's a commodities trading term about futures pricing, but that's exactly my point.
Yeah.
You don't need to know what it is.
Yeah.
But they used it as a moat. This text argues that the moat has finally been filled in.
But I mean, society still heavily treats financial acumen like a personality type, though.
Oh, completely.
People frequently say things like, oh, I'm just not a numbers person, treating investing the way they talk about, being able to sing opera or paint a masterpiece. Like you're either born with it or you're not.
And that societal myth served a very specific, very lucrative purpose for legacy institutions.
Keep people intimidated.
Exactly. Because if the public believes wealth generation requires unique, inherent genius, they won't even attempt it on their own. They will hand their capital over to wealth managers who charge hefty expense ratios, or even worse, they will just leave their money in a basic savings account.
Which just loses purchasing power to inflation every single year.
Exactly. It just erodes.
Yeah.
But the premise of our source text aggressively rejects that entire setup. It states unequivocally that there is a set of instructions. A, How?
Okay, but let me push back on that a little bit.
Sure, go ahead.
Because, I mean, does catering strictly to beginners risk setting people up with a false sense of simplicity?
How do you mean?
Well, global markets are, like, infinitely complicated. You've got webs of geopolitical events, corporate yes. earnings reports, shifting interest rate environments, supply chain logistics. I mean, it's dizzying. So are we, by focusing on absolute beginners, are we stripping away the inherent complexity just to get people through the front door?
That is a very fair question. But I think we have to separate the complexity of the asset from the complexity of the access.
The access versus the asset. Okay, break that down for me.
Think about driving a car, right?
Okay.
The internal combustion engine, the transmission, the onboard computers, the fuel injection system.
Mm.
Those are phenomenally complex systems. You and I probably couldn't build one from scratch.
Oh, I definitely couldn't. I struggle with IKEA furniture.
Right. But the user interface of the car, it's just a steering wheel and two pedals.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
For a long time, the financial industry forced you to build the engine yourself before you are ever allowed to drive the car.
That's a great way to put it.
So the modern how for beginners is really about abstracting the complexity. Innovations like broad market index funds or target date funds and robo-advisors, those are the pedals in the steering wheel. You don't need to manually analyze a single company's balance sheet to capture the overall growth of, say, the American economy.
You just need to know how to press the gas pedal.
Exactly. The abstraction is what allows the beginner to participate safely.
And, you know, I think that abstraction is critical, especially when we look at the psychological burden placed on everyday people recently.
A massive shift.
Massive. Like, over the last 40 years, we saw a huge transition from defined benefit plans like pensions, where the company just handled all the investing for you, to defined contribution plans.
Right, the classic 401k.
Yeah, the 401k. And suddenly, overnight, everyday workers were forced to become investors, whether they actually wanted to or not.
And that shift placed the burden of market performance squarely onto the shoulders of the individual.
With, like, zero training.
Exactly. The educational infrastructure did not evolve to match that new responsibility at all. We basically expect individuals to enter adulthood intrinsically knowing how compound interest works, how to balance a portfolio, how to evaluate expense ratios.
Which is crazy because nobody teaches you that in high school.
No, they don't. And the resulting friction creates a tremendous amount of shame. People sit in the break room and nod along when colleagues discuss their portfolios because admitting ignorance feels like a personal moral failure.
Yeah, you don't want to be the one person in the room who says, I have no idea what a mutual fund is.
Precisely. And that's why our source text is so powerful. By explicitly and proudly targeting beginners, the text validates that novice experience.
It's like it gives you permission to be clueless.
Exactly. It removes the shame by essentially saying, we fully expect you not to know this yet. It creates a psychological safe space to start at absolute zero. Without actively welcoming the absolute novice, that invisible barrier of shame keeps people completely paralyzed.
Paralyzed is the right word, because getting started is always the hardest part.
Overcoming inertia is always the most energy-intensive part of any behavioral change. The text's focus on the word start targets that exact friction.
You are transitioning your identity, right?
Yes, from a pure consumer into an accumulator of assets.
Mm-hmm.
And by focusing purely on the start, it relieves the beginner from the pressure of having to achieve market mastery on day one.
Right. But, and this is a big word, but overcoming that psychological barrier means absolutely nothing if you still face a structural financial wall.
The physical constraint.
Exactly. Which brings us to the second half of our source text, the physical constraint of doing all of this with little money.
Those two words are doing a lot of heavy lifting.
They really are. It doesn't say, you know, how to invest your year-end corporate bonus. It specifically names little money as the vehicle for this journey.
And that is the active dismantling of the most pervasive traditional assumption in finance.
The idea that you need money to make money.
Precisely. The idea that you need pre-existing wealth to participate in wealth generation. For generations, investing was viewed as a defensive activity reserved for those who already had a massive surplus.
Right. Like, you paid your mortgage, you paid your bills, you saved your emergency fund, and then only if you had, like, $10,000 left over at the end of the year, you were allowed to become an investor.
Which created a brutal, self-fulfilling prophecy of financial exclusion.
How so? I mean, I know what you mean, but spell it out for the listener.
Well, you need to invest to outpace inflation and actually grow wealth over your lifetime. But the gatekeepers required you to already have wealth before you could even access the investment tools.
It's the classic catch-22. You need experience to get the job, but you need the job to get experience.
Exactly. So the logical question is, how did little money actually become viable?
Because frankly, 20 years ago, this text would have been pure science fiction.
Oh, completely. It became viable through radical architectural shifts in brokerage technology.
The tech caught up.
The tech caught up and the business models changed. Think back to the past. If you wanted to buy a single share of a company, the brokerage might charge you a $20 commission fee just to place the trade.
Right, just to execute the order.
Yes. So, if you only had $50 to invest, nearly half of your capital is instantly wiped out by fees before you even own the asset.
That math is just brutal. It makes little money investing fundamentally impossible.
The structural barriers completely reinforce the psychological barriers.
Yeah.
But then we hit a massive turning point, the 2019 race to zero.
Oh, yes. I remember this.
Major brokerages systematically slashed their trading commissions down to $0.
Just completely eliminated them.
The elimination of those commission fees, combined with the introduction of fractional shares, completely rewrote the rules of entry.
Okay, let's talk about fractional shares, because I think for a lot of people, that is the real game changer here.
It is the defining mechanism. Fractional shares meant you no longer needed, say, $3,000 to buy a single share of a major tech company.
Which was a huge barrier. Amazon, Google, they used to have these massive share prices.
Exactly. With fractional shares, you could buy a $5 slice of that exact same share.
How does that actually work on the back end, though? Like, am I literally earning a piece of a paper certificate?
Practically speaking, the broker holds the whole share in their inventory, and they allocate a microscopic fraction of it to your internal ledger.
Ah, okay. So it's an accounting innovation.
Yes. But the result is that suddenly, the tools of the financial elite were miniaturized. They were scaled down to the micro level without losing their fundamental mechanical properties.
It still goes up and down exactly the same way.
Exactly. The percentage gains and losses are identical, just on a smaller scale.
Okay, but I have to ask the difficult mathematical question here, though.
Go for it.
If I only have $5 to invest, right, and inflation is running at, let's say, 3 or 4% a year, and my fractional share of an index fund returns maybe 7 or 8% on average? I mean, I am netting pennies.
Literally fractions of a penny in real terms.
Honestly, yeah. So isn't telling people to invest little money just giving them false hope? Are we just selling a psychological placebo to beginners? Or does that microscopic amount actually build wealth?
It's a great critique. Because if you view that initial $5 as the end game, then yes, the mathematical change in your net worth is entirely negligible.
Right. You're not retiring on a $5 investment.
No, you are not. But the premise of our source text relies heavily on behavioral economics. It implies that the action of investing is infinitely more critical than the initial volume of capital.
The action itself is the point. Let's frame this systemically, because, you know, explaining microinvesting isn't like trying to fill an Olympic swimming pool with a tiny teacup.
Right, where the sheer volume of the task makes the effort mathematically pointless. You'd be there for lifetimes.
Exactly. It's more like planting a single seed in an empty lot. It relies on the mechanisms of time, compounding growth, and environmental exposure rather than the sheer brute force of your initial deposit.
That is the perfect distinction. Compounding requires a long time horizon to manifest its most dramatic hockey stick style effects.
The snowball effect.
Exactly. When you plant that seed with little money, you are doing two things simultaneously. First, yes, you are exposing whatever capital you have to the compounding engine of the market. But second, and honestly far more importantly, you are building the infrastructure of a financial habit.
You are laying the behavioral pipes.
Precisely. You are learning the interface of the brokerage app.
Figuring out what all the buttons do.
Exactly. You are learning how it feels to see a red number on your screen when the market inevitably dips, and you are learning not to panic and sell at the bottom.
Which is huge. The emotional aspect is half the battle.
It's more than half.
Yeah.
You're experiencing the emotional volatility of global markets in a sandbox environment where the real world stakes are incredibly low.
It basically acts as a set of training wheels.
A perfect analogy.
Because, think about it. If your very first experience with a 10% market correction happens when you only have $5 invested, you lose, what, 50 cents?
50 cents. It stings your pride, maybe, right. But it doesn't devastate your life. You still pay your rent.
Right. But if you wait until you've saved $50,000 in cash to make your very first investment, that exact same 10% correction means a $5,000 drop.
overnight.
And the sheer panic of seeing $5,000 vanish could easily cause a novice to liquidate their entire portfolio at the exact wrong time.
It happens all the time. People buy high and sell low out of pure terror. So the constraint of little money is actually a protective mechanism.
Oh, I like that. A protective mechanism.
The source text doesn't explicitly spell out the risk mitigation aspect, but it is deeply baked into the promise. You are essentially paying a microscopic tuition fee for an invaluable real-world financial education.
A 50-cent tuition fee to learn how to handle a bear market.
Exactly. And when your earning power eventually increases over time, mm-hmm. when you suddenly have $500 or $5,000 a month to invest, the behavioral muscles and the systemic understanding are already securely in place.
The pipes are laid. You just have to increase the water pressure.
Yes. The infrastructure is there waiting for the capital.
And, you know, the beauty of the phrase little money is its subjective relativity.
It's extremely subjective.
Just not set a hard dollar amount, right? It doesn't say how to invest with exactly $500.
Right. Because what is little to one person might be the cost of morning coffee, while to someone else, it's an entire week's worth of groceries.
By keeping the term subjective, the text ensures the door remains completely open to the widest possible audience. It meets you where you are.
And it reflects a modern reality where the physical constraints have truly been eradicated. The minimum deposit requirements at mega brokerages, they have dropped to zero.
Zero.
The transaction costs dropped to zero.
Also zero.
The text promises a pathway where the fundamental mechanisms of finance, the compound interest, the dividend yields, the broader market exposure, they do not discriminate based on the size of the initial deposit.
Provided you understand the how.
Provided you take the time to learn the how, yes.
Which honestly brings us to the ultimate synthesis of our deep dive today. We started by looking at this massive, impenetrable fortress of Wall Street.
The walled garden.
The walled garden. We took a single 8-word sentence, how beginners can start investing with little money, and we looked at the massive structural, technological, and psychological shifts that actually made those words a reality.
It's a huge paradigm shift.
It is. This text isn't just a catchy title for an article or a video. It operates as a really powerful thesis statement for the total democratization of finance.
It unites two incredibly vulnerable states.
Which ones?
The novice mindset, which is lacking knowledge, and the low capital reality, which is lacking resources.
It brings them together and offers a bridge.
Yes. And for anyone listening right now, whether you are actively prepping to analyze your own portfolio tonight, or you are simply curious about how financial media frames accessibility, this text represents a monumental shift in society.
It really does.
You no longer need a prerequisite level of wealth, mm-hmm. and you do not need to speak the antiquated, exclusionary language of Wall Street to participate. The tools have literally been scaled down to fit into your hands exactly where you are today.
The structural barriers are gone, the drawbridge is down, and the heavy iron gates are just wide open.
Anyone can walk in.
But, and this is where I want to leave our listener today, that leaves us with a fascinating, entirely new paradigm to navigate.
The aftermath of the walls falling.
Exactly. Because if the fortress walls are completely down, and everyone is suddenly standing inside the market with their brightly colored gamified trading apps open, what does that actually mean for the system as a whole?
It's a profound question.
Are we truly democratizing wealth for the everyday beginner? Or by funneling millions of small dollar fractional share accounts through these new massive tech platforms, are we just democratizing liquidity for the massive institutions that still ultimately own the fortress?
That is the multi-trillion dollar question, isn't it?
It really is. And it's something to ponder the next time you tap buy on a fractional share. Thanks so much for joining us on this deep dive. We'll catch you in the next one.